All right, everybody, get ready to get your feathers a little ruffled because I have a topic that some people are like super passionate about and others are like, meh, I don't know. I mean, I do it, but I guess it works or it wouldn't be a thing. Well, there's a lot of things that we do that are tradition-based in an attempt to be a patient advocate, but really the data is not all that great. And this may be one of those things. Yep. We're going to talk about tocolysis because there's a lot of confusion about what it can and what it can't do. And we're going to cover a lot of data. We'll go down a history timeline here, as you know, is often the case on our podcast. And we're going to make the case of our final conclusion that I won't tell you now, of course. You got to listen to the episode, but I'll give you the final conclusion and the clinical implication at the end. Of course, we're going to give the ACOG guidance because, yes, ACOG does mention and reference tocolysis with very specific caveats. And we're going to cover that in a minute. Now, let me just say it right now. In my institution where I trained, and still to this day, tocolysis was not done. Yeah. Oh, and I know you're thinking, where was that place? It's a big name. It's, as you all know, I'm very proud of my alma mater, which is UT Southwestern and Parkland Hospital. Tocolysis, not done. It was not done when I was a medical student. It wasn't done when I was a resident. It wasn't there when I graduated from residency, and still not done. And they have an RCT to justify that move. That came out in 2021 in the Green Journal. I'm going to give you that info in a minute. Because I know, remember, the title is Tocolysis Confusion. I know someone's going to point out an article and go, clearly, it prolongs as short-term prolongation of pregnancy. Okay, hey, I'll give you that to you. I'll give that. Absolutely. But the question is, does that short-term prolongation really affect neonatal outcome? Does it improve things? That's the different question. That's part of the confusion that we're going to get into. Guys, lots of data here. We're going to make it super, super plain and give some fun clinical pearls as we go along the way. Okay. So the title of this episode is Tocolysis Confusion, because boy, is there some for sure. Tocolytic drugs have been around for a long time. And the earliest tocolytic drug was one that we would never use today. Anybody? Good old ethanol. Yep, getting a little sauced up actually decreases contractions because ethanol is a smooth muscle relaxer. That's obviously not done anymore, but there's a variety of agents, as we all know, from calcium channel blockers, beta mimetics, to magnesium sulfate, to nitric oxide donors. We're going to talk about all of this because all of these have been studied and it adds to the confusion. Plus, most of the data, guys, here it is, we're still in the intro, and we haven't even gotten to the body of the evidence, but most of the data, when you look at a tocolytic systematic review or a case report or a case series, some kind of observational study, more than 90% of these come from patients with threatened preterm labor with intact membranes. Remember that. And even the WHO states that that's one of the limitations in the data. Most are with intact membranes. Only about 9% of available data comes from patients with ruptured membranes. But here's the tie-in to what's new in print. You know that that's our commitment, right? In May of 2024, a new publication adds more information to that subset of patients treated with tocolytic therapy. Okay, so we're going to talk about threatened preterm labor in general and tocolysis. We're going to talk about preterm pre-labor rupture of membranes according to this brand new publication from May 2024, and we're going to make it very, very clear. Remember, of course, we're going to get into the Parkland RCT from 2021 from my old faculty. They trained me, and I'm very proud of that. And we're going to get to the ACOG guidance. Now, I'll be very clear before we leave the intro. This does not mean that you don't actively intervene for patients with threatened preterm labor, because preterm labor, remember, it's the leading cause of deaths in newborns and in children, right? In perinatal mortality, it's preterm birth. That's a bad player. So you got to be active. The question is, does adding tocolysis to the other active management plans, does that make a difference? I'm not going to tell you, but it may not be what you think. There's only two interventions, only two, that do have significant reduction here in perinatal morbidity and mortality surrounding preterm birth. Anyone? Anyone? I'm not going to tell you just now. I'm going to tell you what ACOG says those two things are in just a minute. So now that I've laid out kind of the overall gestalt, that's a good word, right? The gestalt of our episode, let's get to tocolysis confusion and why Parkland Hospital is pretty much validated and as to why they do not use tocolysis as part of their management algorithm in threatened preterm labor. Ooh, here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls. All right, quick disclosure before we get on to the good stuff. Boy, I sure miss the studio. I haven't been in studio in a long time, just because I'm moving around. I've had a lot of stuff going on. My schedule is always kind of wacky. Guys, you do not want to see my schedule. It'll give you anxiety. That's why people always ask me, hey, in 2 days, what, brother, 2 days? If it's not on my schedule, I'll worry about that 24 hours ahead of time. I only know what I'm doing. Here's a little insight to the Choppa world and Choppa brain. I only know what's going on for the next 24 hours because my calendar is a nightmare. All self-inflicted, mind you, okay, because I've got a lot of stuff happening. So people ask, hey, on Thursday morning, where are you? What are you doing Thursday morning? I'll tell you that Wednesday night. I mean, I'm not worried about Thursday if it's Monday. I got to figure that out later on because I've got so much stuff happening. And all to say, my schedule has been a little packed, so I haven't been able to get to studio. Like today, I am on call. So I'm just outside of our car room trying to knock this out because I thought this was pretty neat. And again, this just came out in May of 2024. So I'm trying to get this out in a timely fashion. Tonight, I've got some other events that I'm not going to be able to get home until probably around 10 p.m. Thankfully, I love what I do, guys. But anyway, if you hear weird stuff, I know there may be an echo in here because I'm in a little car room, but I'm trying to get this out quickly. I promise I will get back in studio to try to hammer things out as soon as my schedule lights up. That's a joke, but as soon as possible. But right now, I am in the hospital. I'm doing this on call, so I apologize for any weird background noise ahead of time. So before we start, let's just quickly say what our true foe is here, right? What our true enemy here is not preterm labor. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, I can't believe you said that. Wait a minute. It's not. What does WHO, what does the CDC, what does ACOG, what does SMFM say is the leading cause of perinatal morbidity and mortality? It's not preterm labor. It's preterm birth. It's the birth itself, the early delivery that's got the issues. And I know what you're thinking. It's kind of semantics because you don't get preterm birth without preterm labor. Touche. However, remember that most patients who present, here's the problem, guys, or the benefit, however you look at it. Most patients who present, or at least 50% in some studies, who present with threatened preterm labor, oh, I'm contracting, you know, even though I'm closed, or maybe I'm 1 centimeter. Those patients who present that way preterm, as long as they're not ruptured, 50% of those will stop by themselves and not deliver preterm. Okay, so I don't know if you look at that as a good thing, like, well, 50% won't, or oh my goodness, 50% will. There's no way to answer that. The point is, this is why some of the tocolytic therapy, some of the things in print get kind of confusing, because you're talking about something that may stop by itself about 50% of the time. Now, remember, I'm not saying to ignore symptoms of preterm labor, not at all. I'm just saying that giving tocolysis as the absolute way to break these contractions and have overall impact on neonatal morbidity and mortality, here's a spoiler, is just not there. There is data, and I'm going to get to it, that it may have short-term prolongation. In some studies, 2 days, and others up to 7. But the problem with that is that some of those patients may have stopped contracting no matter what you did. You see the issue here? That's the confusion surrounding tocolysis. Now, is there evidence that some medications absolutely can decrease contraction frequency? Yes, without doubt. We have bench models, we have in vitro studies, and we have in vivo studies that have shown decrease in uterine contractions, increase in quiescence with like calcium channel blockers like nifedipine. Okay, we know that it does that. We're going to see it on the monitor. Oh, I have fixed her. I have fixed her. She has gone to one contraction every 10 minutes to one contraction every 30. I have done that. Okay, I get that. Tocolysis does have a role. It does decrease contractions and may have short-term benefit, like for 2 days, up to 7 in some studies. The question is that greatly reduce perinatal morbidity? We don't have any evidence that that's the case. And that's exactly what ACOG states, guys. This is why it's confusing, all right? And this is why some hospitals and some very respected hospitals like my alma mater, which is Parkland Hospital, they still don't have tocolysis. They haven't had that in 30 years. It's been basically hydration, sedation, and the other two agents that are done, which definitely do reduce perinatal morbidity. Of course, steroids is one, and the other is magnesium sulfate for fetal neuroprotection under 32 weeks. Okay, so again, does it have a role? Yes, it's going to have a role in decreasing pain for the patient because they're going to have decreased contractions. But does it overall increase perinatal outcomes? Does it improve outcomes? The data is just not there. So it's super confusing. But again, we're going to walk down an entire timeline, guys. So we're going to do it quickly. But we are going to go down an entire timeline here that kind of makes this case. Okay, it's super interesting. And of course, I'm going to highlight both that Parkland publication, which was an RCT from my old faculty, and we're going to get into some meta-analyses and the May 2024 publication released this month on tocolysis for patients who are at the highest risk of delivering early, which, of course, is those that are ruptured preterm. All right, so pre-labor, preterm rupture of membranes. We're going to get into that data. All right. Now, that's a lot of stuff and I haven't even gotten started. So very quickly, as a quick way to remember some of the tocolytic options that are out there, and I learned this years ago and it's still a thing. I think a couple of EMT courses that I've looked at talking about perinatal care or acute labor care in the field outside of a hospital have used this as part of their awareness. I love this. You'll never forget the options for tocolytics if you remember, it's not my time. Now you're like, what? What is that? It's not my time. So the patient's contracting and she goes, oh my gosh, I'm contracting too early. It's not my time. The first letter of those statements, INMT, are the most popular options for tocolytics. How about that? It's not my time. So the I for it's is for indomethacin. The N for not is nifedipine. M is magnesium sulfate, which does have some tocolytic properties, but now kind of defaults, of course, to neuroprotection, not a traditional tocolytic, although historically it was used. So that's why it's still in the it's not my time little catchphrase. And then the T, of course, is what? Come on, guys. Tributyline. So even though there's others out there, there's nitric oxide-based agents. There's other medications that are oxytocin receptor modulators and blockers. Those are not available yet. But if you remember, it's not my time, or INMT, you will always remember indomethacin, nifedipine, magnesium, and tributyline. All right, now that we covered the INMT little mnemonic, let's move on to the data. First of all, can you believe, I don't know if you can hear this or not. So I'm sitting in my car room. It's been totally quiet. And outside the window, there's somebody in the landscape department now perfectly timed because I think they're looking at me. Just kidding. But can you believe this coincidental time? Now they decide to get on the mower and start mowing the grass. Are you kidding me? I've been sitting here for like an hour. Nothing is happening. You're killing me, dude. Killing me. So if you hear the lawnmower outside, number one, well, at least we'll have freshly cut grass. Number two, damn, I'm just trying to get this thing done. Can y'all please? Unbelievable. I don't know if you all remember some episodes ago, I was doing it in our student study area here at the hospital. And then no joke, like a window washer starts washing the windows right outside of where I'm recording. It's the timing is, it's uncanny. It's amazing. Okay, anyway, so I've already lost it. Oh yeah, so we covered the INMT, now let's get into the data. So remember, the focus is on the May 2024 new publication on patients who are under 37 weeks and they're ruptured. What are we going to do? Well, of course, it depends on where they're at, right? If they're under 32 weeks, they're going to get MAG for neuroprotection. If they have not had a course of steroids, they're going to get betamethasone or dexamethasone, whatever's your institution, but betamethasone is the most typical. And we're gonna watch them, get an ultrasound, check EFW, check presentation, look for abruption, look for other causes, do all of the regular stuff. The question is, do you have to add a specific tocolytic agent? Now, let me just set this out because I'm going to go through the whole timeline here in a minute. Sure, you absolutely can. But know why you are doing it, what it does, and why you are not doing it, what it cannot do. Okay, so if you're going to do it because you want to decrease contraction frequency to try to get steroids on for 48 hours, where most of the data show, and yeah, we can probably have short-term prolongation for 48 hours, that's totally fine. However, if we're trying to say we're trying to improve neonatal outcomes just by adding Procardia as the agent here, which is typically the most common now because MAG is now for neuroprotection, then when we're going to do that just to try to improve neonatal outcomes, that's probably not evidence-based. Well, not probably. That's not evidence-based. All right? Now, I'm going to give you the ACOG scenarios. There's only two scenarios. Let me just spill it here, but I'll give you the direct verbiage in a minute. Two scenarios where ACOG says you might could consider tocolysis, even though it's of unclear benefit. All right? The first is if you need to transport the kid out to another higher level of care and she's contracting, do tocolysis as long as it's under 34 weeks, because upper limit is 34 or 33 and 6, based on who you read, and do that to try to get her to a safe location. That's the first indication. Second, of course, is if you need to do that and it just happens that she needs a full course of corticosteroids, then you've got two wins there, because those are the two independent things. You either need to transport to a higher level of care, and so you're trying to buy time, or you need to get steroids on board. That's pretty much it. So once you have steroids on board, unless you're going to do a rescue course, which you can do, that's ACOG says you can do that as soon as 7 days, up to 14 days later, even though that's a little controversial. But you probably don't have to do tocolysis after that. It's for the initial course of steroids. And ACOG reminds us, remember, the only two interventions that really do make a dent in the problem are correctly given antenatal corticosteroids and magnesium sulfate when timed correctly. I love how our old faculty, my old attendings at Parkland in 2021, when they published their Green Journal review, they quoted ACOG's verbiage, which I'll give you a little bit later on as we go on into the episode as well. But let me read you the snippet as it appears in the 2021 publication from the RCT from Parkland. And again, I'm going to put this into the timeline in a minute, but it fits perfectly here. Let me just give you that quote from the college, because it really does show you how they're kind of walking this tight line between, yeah, you might could for short-term prolongation, but X, Y, and Z. So let me read you this statement directly from the 2021 RCT, quoting ACOG, and then we're going to get back with our timeline. Yes, I'm going to give you the entire reference for this 2021 RCT from the Green Journal from my old attendings. That was Dr. Casey, that was Dr. McIntyre, Dr. Levino, God bless him, Dr. Ed Wells. They trained me, guys, not only as a medical student, but as a resident. I love seeing these publications out because I'm like, ah, look at that. They're still at it. I love that. I know it's kind of geeky, but anyway, it is what it is. So they state, quote, "The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists declare that although tocolytic therapy may provide short-term prolongation of pregnancy to allow the administration of antenatal corticosteroids," here it is, guys, here's the balancing part, quote, "there is no evidence that tocolytic therapy results in improved neonatal benefit or pregnancy prolongation resulting in significant improved neonatal outcomes," end quote. Yikes. All right. So that's from the 2021 publication from the Green Journal, which was nifedipine for acute tocolysis of preterm labor. I'll give you those details as we plug that in into our timeline here in just a minute. And I want to be fair. Is there publications that we can look at and go, look, we gave tocolysis and clearly there was improved outcome? Sure, they're out there, but it's not the tocolysis that's doing it. It's the other interventions that are done. Remember, ACOG says only two things really make a dent in neonatal morbidity from preterm labor: steroids and mag sulfate. And antibiotics, of course, should prevent early onset sepsis, but it's really it's mag and steroids, according to the ACOG text that I'll give you in a minute. So, yes, there is data, but it's an indirect benefit, all right? When you look at those who had those treatments without tocolysis, the data kind of it doesn't stand anymore. Do y'all get that? And now I know, it's like, well, aren't we winning because we get that delay for up to 48 hours? For sure, but remember, 50% of patients who present with preterm labor symptoms will stop by themselves. That's already in the favor of not doing anything. Does that make sense? So it's super confusing, but and it's confusing because ACOG says, yes, do it for short-term benefit for 48 hours, especially if you need to transport and they haven't had a previous course of steroids. But then they buffer that by going, yeah, but we don't really know if that by itself is going to change outcomes. And the data show it does not. So it's walking that timeline, all right? I mean, that tightrope. So if you're getting ready to do your oral boards and you're asked about tocolytics, you've got to cover both sides of that fence. Sure, absolutely can be considered for short-term prolongation, knowing that long-term outcomes are not going to be any different just because of that one intervention. We're going to make a dent in perinatal mortality from preterm labor and morbidity because of steroids and magnesium sulfate when appropriately given. And on top of that is the use of antibiotics for GBS prevention. Once the culture comes back, then you can stop that appropriately as necessary. But it's steroids and mag that really make the difference here. Does that make sense? And remember, not all hospitals do tocolysis. It's mag and steroids as appropriate, and then IV hydration and sedation, since 50% of these thankfully will stop. Is that incredible or what? So, I keep on spilling a lot of the details before we even get into it, but I just get so excited because I remember, guys, when I trained and I was reading stuff, right, and I was always very type A. Always very type A, little OCD, and so I'd read a lot. And so a patient would come in with preterm labor. This is when I was a resident at Parkland, an intern. I remember I was an intern and I asked my senior, hey, can we give her a calcium channel blocker for tocolysis? You would have thought I said, oh my gosh, can we strap her to a pole and flog her? Because it was like, I can't believe you said that. You said what? I was like, I just read like a couple of articles that, you know, we can consider that. And so it was just this like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. I mean, it's heresy. And I was so confused as an intern. But it took a long time, guys, really to let that settle. That's why we're doing this episode, because this new publication from May 2024 also helps settle it, which is know why you're doing it. Know what it does and what it does not do. And according to Parkland data, both from internal studies and things in print, even when I was an intern, it's like it's not going to change overall outcomes. So I'm going to give you that specific Parkland publication that what actually started, I think, like in 2018, but it finally got published in 2021. But there's a lot more data since that. So now that I've said that, is everybody good? I think, let me check. The guy's still out there mowing the lawn. Guys, ADD is real. Oh my gosh, this is killing me. I got to close the window. Let's start our timeline starting from 1999. Ending in May 2024. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, hell no. I don't got time to listen to this. Yes, you do. Sit down. I promise it's going to be worth it, and we're all going to learn something, and it's going to be fast. It's going to be fast, okay? Because I'm all caffeinated up, and we're going to knock this out. So 1999, we're going to start there. We're going to bring it to May. I'm going to tell you the ACOG data, and it's going to make a lot of sense, all right? Plus, it's super interesting. Okay, let that simmer in there for a minute, and then when I come back, let's do the 1999 systematic review and then go forward. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. Yeah, there was a lot of data even before 1999 because you had to have data in order to do the systematic review that we're about to talk about. This came out in November 1999, which also, by the way, a great Prince song. In November of 1999, systematic review of available data. Okay, so they took a look. Now, remember, this was patients who were not ruptured. These mainly had threatened preterm labor, and the main outcome was a prolongation of pregnancy for at least 48 hours up to 7 days. This was in the Green Journal. The lead author was Gytevaev, so it's G-Y-E-T-V-A-I. I know I didn't say that right, but I'm rolling with it, all right? The title was Tocolytics for Preterm Labor, a Systematic Review. Well, there you go. Short of it is, they looked at beta mimetics, indomethacin, atosaban, ethanol. Remember, this was, they looked at all the data, guys, before 1999. Do not use ethanol, please. Plus, it probably doesn't work in normal doses. You got to be super high levels of intoxication, which has its own set of issues. And let's not do that. But they included it into this review. How about that? And they used mag sulfate. Okay. So they looked at all of these together to see which one was effective for prolongation of pregnancy. Well, what they found was that, quote, tocolytics were not associated with improved perinatal outcomes despite any prolongation that they found with their use. But maternal side effects were possible and were common, including palpitations, nausea, tremor, sometimes chorioamnionitis, hyperglycemia with the beta-2 agents, hypokalemia. So the point was, well, the idea of let's give it, it can't hurt, and it can only help may not be absolutely true here, because they didn't find that it really helped in terms of overall perinatal outcomes. And, well, can it hurt? Well, there was no severe adverse issues, but there was some significant side effects, all right? So they concluded, quote, although tocolysis may prolong pregnancy in the short term, they have not been shown to improve perinatal or neonatal outcomes and can have significant adverse effects on women in preterm labor, end quote. Wow, 1999, guys. So there is exactly the ACOG statement. Y'all get that? Yeah, you can. It may give you some prolongation of pregnancy, at least to get steroids on board or to get her out of your hands into another institution where she needs to be. But we're probably not going to have big improvement in perinatal outcome. That we've known that since 1999, y'all. But this was not ruptured. Okay, so if you're thinking, well, then why did the people in May of 2024 do this new publication? Because that was specifically filling that gap where there's a lot less information, which is tocolysis in patients who are ruptured. Okay, now that's a whole other issue. We're not going to talk about preterm, pre-labor rupture of membranes, because that's latency antibiotics. It depends on when you rupture. And that's a whole other issue that we've covered many times. The issue here is on tocolysis. So that was 1999. Now we're going to jump over a decade to 2012 with a separate meta-analysis. All right. So we've covered one systematic review from 99. Now let's go to 2012 with a network meta-analysis. So this is a separate publication. This was published in BMJ. Right? The title was Tocolytic Therapy for Preterm Labor, a Systematic Review and Network Meta-Analysis. Don't you love it when it's so easy? I mean, thank you. Just make it plain and don't give me the answer in the title, because you know that irritates me. So here's what they found. So one, they're like, you know what? Indomethacin and calcium channel blockers, they, if they're going to give you short-term prolongation of pregnancy, those are probably the ones that are going to do it the best, right? So out of all tocolytics, indomethacin, which of course is limited to max weighted hours and then should never be used past 30 weeks up to 32 based on who you read, or nifedipine. And in this systematic review. Now remember, this is 2012. See, here's where things get confusing, because they're like, hey, we had a decrease. It did give better outcomes for neonatal mortality. That's a win. Neonatal respiratory distress. That's a win. And maternal side effects were the only negative downside. So like, hey, we did have some improvements in perinatal outcomes. So that's helpful. But remember, is it the tocolytic that did it or the adjuvant therapies? The answer is it's likely the adjuvant therapies. Make sense? So that is 2012. See, we're moving quickly here. And now I want to jump. Let's go. Let's take a big jump to 2021. 2021 are my old faculty. That's Brian Casey, who yelled at me. He yelled at me. He yelled at me a lot as an intern. Dr. Casey. I'm sure I just wore him out. Big surprise. So Dr. Casey, Dr. Levino, and Ed Wells. Again, this is a Green Journal. We've already alluded to this 2021, but this was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial of nifedipine for singleton pregnancy between 28 weeks up to 33 and 6, all right? True preterm labor. I mean, contractions, they had 2 centimeters dilated at least up to 4 centimeters, all right? So, yeah, this is the group that we really want to prevent them from going into true labor. Well, they stopped the study early because of futility. So scientific way of saying nothing happened, right? There was no difference than the placebo group. So super disappointing, but validating to Parkland's protocol. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, of course they're going to validate that. That's the Parkland way. They don't do tocolysis there. Right, but this is in a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. It's not that they found what they were looking for. They were doing what was evidence-based, and this proved it. Okay, so let me just read you the conclusion here. Acute tocolysis of preterm labor with nifedipine did not affect preterm birth rates, delivery within 48 hours, or neonatal outcomes. So that was poo-pooed across everything. They didn't get to term any better. It didn't stop contractions within 48 hours compared to placebo, and neonatal outcomes made no difference. How about that? So they stated, quote, "Our findings support the current ACOG position that demonstrates benefits of tocolysis in the treatment of preterm labor remains elusive." There it is, that the benefits of tocolysis in the treatment of preterm labor remains elusive, end quote. And they make it very clear that tocolysis has never been, nor continues to be, a part of the management plan of preterm labor at Parkland. So let me be very clear. This thing is not trying to, you know, give, you know, kisses to Parkland or anything, even though I do respect it quite a bit as my alma mater. It's just that, yeah, they took a lot of heat for that. I remember Parkland is into tocolysis. Well, because it doesn't change overall outcomes. You're going to win at 48 hours, maybe, and it's not the tocolysis that's changing the outcomes. It's the two main medications, which ACOG states in their practice bulletin on management of preterm labor, that actually do it, steroids and meg sulfate. Okay, guys, you see how we're jumping quickly? So that was 2021, and we're going to move very fast. I just want to highlight a couple of names here before we get to May 2025. Look at that. I've gone to the future. May 2024, and then we're going to wrap it up. Okay, and then I'm going to give you the clinical implication and ACOG stance here in a minute. But in 2022, you know that I like my systematic reviews because that's the way to put everything in and then see what shakes out. Well, Cochrane Database did this. Again, they walked that tightrope very carefully and covered both sides of the fences, right? So they said, hey, there is some data that you're probably going to have short-term prolongation, especially if you use something like nitric oxide donors, which they have their other set of issues because they cause hypotension. They're really not commercially available. There's no uniform way to do that. But they did say that that nitric oxide donors, calcium channel blockers, of course, oxytocin receptor antagonists, which are not available in the U.S., those can have some benefit, okay, for short-term prolongation. However, here it is, quote, "The evidence was of low or moderate certainty," end quote. In other words, yeah, hey, we have data that shows that it works, but there's kind of some flaws in the data, but hey, we'll take what we got, right? That's basically what they said. So it seemed that that's the head nod to, sure, tocolysis, no problem. But wait for the rest of the story, because the authors added this just to put in that final jab, all right? So here's how they ended their review. Again, Cochrane 2022, based on this topic, all right? Quote, "The effects of tocolytic use on neonatal outcomes like neonatal and perinatal mortality and on safety outcomes like maternal and neonatal infection are uncertain," end quote. Are you kidding me? So they just finished saying, yeah, hey man, nitric oxide donors, for sure. Calcium channel blockers, let's do it. Oxytocin receptor antagonist, yeah, get it on. We're not sure if it's really going to change anything in the long term. You see, cover both bases. That's why, guys, as I'm trying to get to the end here, there is a place for it. And that's mainly for use in the preterm patient under 34 weeks. You're trying to transfer out to another area in the presence of active contractions and or for giving steroids and then you stop the medication at 48 hours. So to be very clear, nobody should be doing maintenance tokenomics. That is not controversial. That's pretty much a no, right? No, there's no data that shows that that's beneficial. All you're going to do there is increase side effects with no absolute benefit. So short-term prolongation is one thing. And again, that's even controversial. Remember, Parkland's like, ex-nay, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to hydrate, sedate, mag as necessary, steroids and GBS coverage until the culture comes back. And so even short-term is controversial. But what is not controversial is maintenance tokenomics. It's not controversial because everybody agrees that shouldn't be done. So I'm telling you, if you're sending patients out on oral terbutaline to keep their contractions at bay, don't do that. I mean, there's definitely issues there with side effects. There's absolutely no data that that's beneficial. Nobody does or nobody recommends maintenance tokenomics. So that's a clear one. Our focus here is on short-term tokenomics and the confusion. So remember, basically, it's a tightrope. On one hand, yes, you might could to get steroids on board, and that's controversial, or to transfer somebody out, which is what ACOG says, even though it's unclear benefit. And again, you stop at 48 hours. All right, let's leave Cochrane, guys, at 2022. See, I told you we're going to move in quick. Now we get to 2024. But wait, before we get to the May, the one from this month, because I'm doing this on May the 7th, 2024, look, guys, it's amazing how long tokenomics has been out. Remember that 1999 systematic review, and tokenomics is still hot as a subject of print and study. Because before we get to the May one, there was a publication that came out, a separate systematic review from February 2024. Did y'all get this? We did 1999. We went to 2012, jumped up to 2021, 2022. Now we're at February 2024. This was a publication that had authors from Japan, Switzerland, and Australia. This was published in the journal Children. Yes, there is a journal Children. There's good publications in it. Now, this was a little different, all right? So listen to this. This was in extremely high-risk patients. So if you think, well, who is that? Well, extremely preterm labor, multiple gestations, growth-restricted fetuses. So this is in the population where you really want this to work. Okay, so meta-analysis of high-risk populations, which is in the title of this study, it's tokenomics therapy inhibiting preterm birth in high-risk populations. And here's the disappointing thing that they found. Even though they did find some evidence that tokenomics can delay birth in some cases up to 7 days. Guys, you think that's great. The problem is, remember who we're studying. Even those in extreme preterm birth, where 7 days is good, it's great, but it still doesn't get them out of the window of harm's way. So what they found was, yes, you can have some short-term prolongation. 48 hours is typical, maybe on the outliers up to seven, but listen to what they're wording closely. Quote, in summary, it remains unclear whether tokenomics therapy for inhibiting preterm labor is beneficial for these high-risk groups and their newborn. Further well-designed randomized trials and observation studies are needed to address the lack of evidence regarding tokenomics therapy in these high-risk populations. End quote. Again, guys, that's talking about tokenomics, not about not giving steroids or not giving mag when necessary, not doing the other interventions. Specifically, I'm going to add nifedipine to decrease your contraction frequency. Know what it does and know what it doesn't do. All right. So again, the publication is from 2024 in February in the journal Children. The title is Tokenomics Therapy Inhibiting Preterm Birth in High-Risk Populations, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. And they said exactly what Parkland has been saying. Yep, you're going to buy some time, bro. You're going to do it. But it's really not going to change the overall outcomes for that child. I know it's heartbreaking and it's not what I want to hear, but that's what we got. That brings us now to our May publication this month from the AJOG, all right? So this is from the Gray Journal, and this is a 5-year outcome. This is a population-based study on the use of tokenomics after preterm pre-labor rupture of membrane. So they followed these for 5 years. So who had preterm pre-labor rupture of membranes exposed to tokenomics and look at neurodevelopmental outcomes, because surely this is going to have benefit, right? Well, come on, guys, let's just get to it as you can figure it out. Quote, there was no difference in the neurodevelopmental outcomes at age 5.5 years among children with or without antenatal exposure to tokenomics after preterm pre-labor rupture of membranes. So as they state, guys, here's what I want you to take home. Quote, you can do it. there's a play. Again, short-term prolongation, no problem. But know the other side of the reality. And it's this, quote, to date, the health benefits of tocolysis remains unproven, both in the short and long term, end quote. Guys, May 2024. So we've gone all the way from 1999 to 2024, right now, in May, with this issue that tocolysis, while it can do a little bit, it doesn't do a lot where we really needed to perform. By the way, even though this publication was very, very good, it was a 5-year population-based study out of the EpiPage 2 group, it's a whole separate other publication, very nicely done. We've known this already. This is not the first paper that shows that tocolysis in patients who were ruptured does not have any outcome benefit. Okay, this was also published in 2003 in the American Journal of Perinatology, and that was a whole separate publication that used MAG as their tocolytic of choice and found, hey, we can get some time benefit, but the overall neonatal outcomes doesn't do anything. That was published in the American Journal of Perinatology, May of 2003. Remember, guys, what I've always said, nothing is new under the sun. And in line with this, a separate publication in 2017, also in the Gray Journal, looking at tocolysis after preterm premature rupture of membranes, because that's what the title is, because this still used the old terminology. This was before the revitalized ACOG movement that changed premature rupture to pre-labor rupture. But in the Gray Journal 2017, the exact same thing was found. In this 2017 publication, the author stated, quote, tocolysis in cases of preterm premature rupture of membranes is not associated with improved obstetric or neonatal outcomes. Its clinical benefit remains unproven, end quote. Y'all, that's super disappointing. I mean, how much, I'm curious. Send me a message on our Insta. Hey, we do tocolysis. I get it. There's not a lot of data, but it is what we do. Remember I said at the beginning, guys, sometimes it's out of tradition because you got to do something, right? Well, we are doing something. We're giving steroids. We're giving MAG. We're doing an estimation of fetal weight by ultrasound. We're looking at fetal position. We're getting NICU ready. We're giving hydration. We're giving antibiotics appropriately. We're looking for GBS. We're looking for overt sources of chorio or IAI. But tocolysis probably can be left out. Guys, look at all of this data. Remember, these last references that I've been giving you, 2003, 2017, are just those that support non-function, no benefit in patients with preterm, pre-labor rupture of membranes. And the last one, before I give you the ACOG stance, the last one that showed the exact same thing was out of Scientific Reports, and that was the EPICE study, okay, E-P-I-C-E or IPICE. So the EPICE study from 2020, exact same issues here. Compared to units who used tocolysis, those who did not use tocolysis after PPROM, absolutely no difference in obstetric neonatal outcomes up to 2 years. So super, super disappointing, all right? So you've got several studies in patients who are ruptured now that have popped up. This one from May of 2024. We've got 2023 from the American Journal of Perinatology. We've got 2017, the Gray Journal, and then 2020 in Scientific Reports that it just doesn't really change outcomes. All right, everyone, we're going to end here with ACOG's bulletin. And as we've already alluded to, ACOG does have a statement on this, which is in ACOG's Practice Bulletin 171, which is the management of preterm labor. This is from 2016 originally, and then, of course, it's had several reaffirmations after that. But it states very, very clearly, quote, the only therapeutic agents currently thought to be clearly associated with improved neonatal outcomes includes antenatal corticosteroids for maturation of fetal lungs and the use of targeted magnesium sulfate for fetal neuroprotection, end quote. But even though it makes that statement, it does give the allowance for tocolytics. It's not contraindicated unless the patient is unstable, there's active infection, there's fetal demise. I mean, it's common sense stuff, right? But ACOG does say, look, we can use tocolytic therapy if you're trying to get some kind of delay for 48 hours or for patient transport knowing, of course, that overall long-term benefit is just not there. The only two things that have made a dent, again, are steroids and MAG. Steroids and MAG. And then very clearly, as we wrap this up, there are some things that ACOG says not to do, which is there is no evidence that supports the use of tocolytic prophylactic therapy, like, oh, you're going to have a lap choly, so I'm going to give you prophylaxis against contractions for that. Don't do that. There's no evidence for that. There's no evidence that supports home uterine activity monitoring as of now. Prophylactic cerclage. Now, that's different than recurrent, second trimester losses or cervical shortening. This is just as a prophylactic issue for preterm labor. It's not there yet. And there is no evidence that supports the use of narcotics. Who thought of that? Narcotics to prevent preterm birth. All right. So there we are. So all to say, there is a place for it. Know why you're doing it. Very short term time prolongation. And know why you're not doing it. You're not doing this because we're going to have a significant impact on neonatal morbidity or mortality, unfortunately, just because patient X got nifedipine and patient Y did not. All right. Okay, everyone. I hope you found this helpful. I've got to get back to work. So anyway, let's start to wrap this up and let's take it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.